Hello, Sick Career Audience. Today we have a very special episode, the first one ever from Iceland. Today we're sitting down and we're talking a little bit about some of the insights that my mom provided me that has informed my career choices, informed my life choices. I think you're going to enjoy this. You'll hear lots of words of wisdom from my mom. And you'll find out how to contact her if you want to find out some real dirt on me after. So enjoy this episode. And as a reminder, if you ever need any help with your career journey, there's three ways I and Kadima Career help you. One, we provide one-on-one coaching with direct and unlimited access to me. Secondly, if you don't need as much support, you don't need as much exposure to me, you can work with our group coaching program. And we provide group coaching, and we support you until you get a better job. And third, if you like to do it on your own, we have a do-it-yourself course called the Job Acquisition Method, and you have all the scripts, all the templates, all the information to land more interviews, more offers, and more money. So with that, listen to this great podcast with me and my mom. And as always, give me feedback, rate and review the podcast, tell others about it, and own your career. Welcome to another episode of the Sick Career Podcast. This one is coming to you right off of the Faroe Islands. I'm on a cruise with my mom, one of the inspiring women in my life that has had an amazing career, has given me some really great life lessons. And we're doing this with not my typical equipment. I'm using this little tiny mic here. Anyway, we're going to be interviewing my mom, Sharon Lorber, formerly Sharon Stein. She went back to Sharon Lorber. You can follow her on LinkedIn. You can check her out on Facebook, where she's probably more active than LinkedIn. And we'll be talking a little bit about some of my mom's advice, wisdom, some of the inspiration that she's given me in my career. Guys, and we'd love to hear your feedback. So with that, I'm going to hand this little tiny mic over to my mom and love her to introduce herself and her career to the Sick Career Podcast audience. Here's mom.
Hi, it's an honor to be on board here. And speaking of careers, I'm probably on my third or fifth. I have stopped counting. The first career was get married. I was looking for somebody to marry, and I found Alan's dad when I was 22. And I thought he was such a nice fellow. I tried to set him up with my girlfriend because Charlie is his name. He and I were just good friends. And I thought my friend would enjoy him. And she wasn't in a good mood that day. And she said to me, well, if you're so nice, why don't you go out with him? And it had never dawned on me. And eventually I asked him out for a date. And here's the result. And I've got another one. And the other one is a girl, 3 years younger than Alan. It's been such a fun ride and a fantastic career because I always wanted to be a mom. So I was blessed with a really terrific son and a terrific daughter. And as they became teenagers or close to it, I realized they really didn't need my input much anymore. Or if they did need it, they certainly didn't want it. So I decided to finally follow a dream, which was to go to college. And I wanted to go to college because I came from a family that when I expressed my thoughts would always say, what do you know? What do you know? And you're crazy. So I decided I'm going to go to school, get credentials, and then I'll know something because I'll have certificates and diplomas. And then they won't think that I'm stupid and I don't know anything. So I go through this journey of getting an undergrad degree. At 43, I signed up for Queen's College and had the great privilege of being accepted by them. And then 5 years later, I applied to Columbia University with the help of fantastic professors who wrote and rewrote and tutored me on my admissions essay. And bless their souls, I got into Columbia. And 3 years later, graduated with a social work degree. And that was my third career because I figure that my education for those 8 years, that was my second career, being a student, which I must tell you was fantastic. Going to school as an adult who actually wanted to learn, not like how I left it as a high schooler who really couldn't care less about learning and was more interested in having fun and going to discos. So that all worked out great. And then I became a licensed clinical social worker And just by happenstance and networking, I wound up meeting a young woman because most people were younger than me in school. And she asked me to hold her job for her because she had a little job at a Daytop Village Drug and Alcohol. It was just a part-time job in the Criminal Justice Division. And I said, sure, Elizabeth, I'll hold the job for you, because she wanted to take off the last couple of months of her pregnancy. So I held the job for Elizabeth. The job went full-time. She didn't want it back. And there I was at Daytop for about 9 years, which was a fabulous experience. I had the privilege of working with New York City probationers and parolees. And it was exciting because it was a different population than being a white woman from the suburbs I was used to. And I remember the interview I had with my potential boss, Danielle Friedman. And she interviewed me and she's looking at me and she said, I don't think you're really going to fit in, Sharon, with the population, because we're South Jamaica and you're a minority and most people are of color. And then I told her, Danielle, you're looking at a white woman from the suburbs, but this white woman from the suburbs grew up in Fort Greene, Brooklyn, where I was a minority. And believe me, I could hold my own. And she trusted me with that. I was there for 9.5 years. And then I ventured off into private practice, which was another new adventure. And I'm still doing it, still loving it, and don't believe in retirement. So as I say to my patients or my kids, actually, I'm going out of that job feet forward. I'm going out feet forward. I always want to work that job. And that's what I'm doing. So right now we're floating on the ocean, having a fantastic time in Iceland, or
between the Faroe Islands and heading back to Iceland to our disembarkment point in Reykjavik. And one of the things that my mom has always inspired me about was the importance of really earning money and saving money. And because of my mom, her wisdom with that, she inspired me always, her and my dad, inspired me really to save money and to invest that money in family and vacations. And fortunately now my mom is generous, taking me and my family, my three kids, my wife, to Iceland. So we decided to do this podcast here. And I was talking to my mom about some of the advice that she's given me throughout my career, throughout my life. And some of it has been to be wise with money, which allows us to take advantage of some things like this. And also some other wisdom. And I think my mom talked a little bit about it, of how she got the job at Daytop through the power of networking and the power of building relationships. But also what my mom inspired me to do is don't be concerned about cutting your losses. So she was a house mom or a housewife.
They were cool housewives, married to the house.
And she decided later in her life that she wanted to go back to school. She went to Queens College that she mentioned, a state school in New York. She graduated actually the same year that I graduated from SUNY Binghamton.
We had a joint graduation party at the Marriott on Long Island, and I was thrilled. Who gets the pleasure of graduating with their child at the same time? It was fabulous.
Yep. And we graduated together. And then when my mom went back to get her master's, she got her master's the same year that my sister graduated from another state school, FIT, in New York. So my mom, she was always reinventing herself. She worked for Dr. Scholl's at some point, restocking the shelves with foot insoles and callus removers. She did Keypun. She was a stenographer at some point. She was doing all these different things, always trying to reinvent herself, always trying to pivot. If something wasn't in a situation that she wanted to, she figured out a way to seize the opportunity. And she did that through networking, building relationships. She did that through education as well. What I will tell you about my mom, which I think is another thing that has really inspired me and informed a lot what we do with Kadima Careers, is to have the clear goals, have the identification of where you want to go. Because as Stephen Covey says in The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, you need to start with the end in mind. And when my mom was thinking about going back to school, she developed a path to get there. When she was thinking about going into social work, she figured out the best schools to go to in the New York area because we're New York based. She wanted to stay in New York. And throughout her career, she's always been very goal driven. Even now, she's very goal driven. We're on this cruise. She's thinking about where we're going on the next cruise, planning that in 2025. We're recording this in 2023. That's how you get things done. And that is how you accomplish goals, whether it's career goals or vacation goals or anything like that. Start with the end in mind. Some other words of wisdom that my mom has really imparted with me. And we were talking about this the other night at dinner during one of my scotches or beers or whatever I'm taking advantage of on this all-inclusive cruise, was the power of tooting one's own horn.
Right. I used to tell you that because you're such a humble person. And I knew you were going to just sit in the class and the teacher would say, like, does anybody know any more about it? And you'd probably sit there humbly and not add. And I used to keep saying to you, Alan, you got to toot your own horn. If you don't toot it, no one's going to toot it for you.
And I do recall my mom saying that. I think I actually went to a therapist in first grade at Hofstra, and they were teaching me things of that nature. And it is something that does not come natural to me. It might seem natural to me on platforms that I'm on now. I'm doing that really because my mom inspired that in me, and also understand that if you don't share what your strengths are, what your values are, no one else is going to hear those and understand those. And as people, as I advise clients about their resume, about their LinkedIn, about their narrative, the tell me about yourself, you need to be able to effectively convey in a humble, authentic, and honest way of what you are, who you are, what you've accomplished in a way that people can easily digest it, so that people can give you the opportunity, pay you what you're worth, give you that opportunity, open that door for you. Mom, if you want to share maybe a story or two from my childhood about how I had challenges with tooting my own horn, or how you kind of pushed me and encouraged me to do so, and maybe a result of that, that would be great for the audience to hear.
Love to help you out with that, Alan. One of the things that I realized is because you were a quiet child, I feared that you were going to go to class, sit at your desk and be quiet and not make friends because you were too shy. So during the summer of your, I think it was your first grade experience, because I thought kindergarten would be too early, I used to say, so Alan, when you're sitting in the classroom on the first day, look to your left, look to your right. The kids next to you are going to be shy and they're going to not be comfortable reaching out. So what I'd like you to do is just turn your head, smile at the child, say, hi, I'm Alan. And they're going to be so happy that you approach them and you'll make friends. And that really wound up evolving into the person you became, because when you moved to Park Slope as a married man and a father and you had dogs, used to take the dogs for a walk in Park Slope, and then you'd walk home with a new friend who had a dog. And that's how you help yourself to make friends in the Park Slope community, by introducing yourself and your dogs, and you still have lifelong friends from Park Slope because you said hi, probably. My dog's name is Coco or Tootsie. What's your dog's name? And yeah, it worked out well for you.
And that's loosely based on fact. So I think you probably did push me in first grade. I didn't know my left from my right until second grade. And I probably did not actually go and reach out to people in elementary school, although I probably told you when I got home that I did, just to quiet the critique. But yes, I did meet some great friends in Park Slope, because that was Oki actually previously. But the power of building those relationships and those commonalities, whether it's because I had a cockapoo in Park Slope, taking my dog for a walk in the morning and meeting some great friends in the neighborhood that actually wound up being really good
friends.
Yeah. Or having those commonalities in any way. And a lot what I advise clients with is on LinkedIn, if you have a commonality of going to the same school, maybe if someone went to Queens College with my mom, if anybody wants to reach out to her on LinkedIn and she can figure out how to DM you back.
I'll figure it out, because yeah. I'm going to call him at 1 o'clock in the morning and say, Al, how do I do this?
Yeah. So right? Anyone from Queen's College can reach out to my mom. They can find her. Her name is Sharon Lorber, by the way, not Sharon Stein. And we can talk a little bit about how that evolved. But yeah, the power of networking, the power of reaching out. I didn't realize that's what my mom was instilling in me at that time. But even to this day, my mom last night at the chocolate fest that they had here on the cruise ship, my mom is busy making friends with some people there that my son wound up sitting down with her and learning all about coin collections.
I introduced them. I said, this is my grandson, Lucas. Victoria, Robert, I'd like you to meet him. And we sat with them for about 45 minutes. And I asked him what he did for a living. And he said he's a jeweler and he buys old collections. And from that, he advised Lucas on what coins to look for. And he explained to him the importance of how to recognize a good coin's potential for growth. And it was such a fantastic conversation that I invited them to join us for dinner tonight, Alan.
Great. So I'll be meeting some new people tonight, but my mom also has given lots of life lessons throughout her career. And some of the lessons were just exposure to what she did in her career. So my mom, when she went back to school, became a social worker, is very into psychology. Coincidentally, probably not coincidentally, my first career was as a psychologist. I went to school for psychology. I was going for a PhD in psychology. I wound up dropping out. My mom was a little more upset than my dad was during that time, but she was supportive of that. And then my second career was what my dad did. So my mom was a social worker. My dad was on Wall Street, and I became an equity analyst there. So I would love my mom's perspective of how you think what I was exposed to from you and dad from a professional perspective might have influenced me and my career decisions throughout the way.
I think that your father's career decisions influenced you because you watched him work very hard. And as far as my influence, I would say my influence has been on learning from the time you were a little guy and I'd have you at the kitchen table trying to get you to write neatly. Sorry, Al. Trying to get you to write neatly. I always impressed learning. So you signed up for the Bronx Zoo children's classes and you won the third grade reading contest for having read the most books. Education was really important to me. And I think that that's the influence I had on you as far as career-wise, because I have seen you over the years of development just continue to grow and expand and really open up and unfold. So I think that's what did it for you.
Yeah. And I think another thing that you've always done and has inspired me, maybe not when I was young, but more so now, is your love for learning and reading. And you were always reading. You still do.
Yeah.
You still read books on your craft of social work as you're dealing with clients of different challenges. And I've always saw you with books on your nightstand. And I do that to this day in terms of leadership, reading leadership books, reading books, learning from other people about how to grow and develop. And that was something else that I really took away from you and your inspiration. And just for those in the listening audience, just for some context, my mom and dad are both alive. They're divorced. They got divorced after 34 years or
33, but yeah. Happily divorced.
Happily divorced. Well, not at first, but now
it was a happy decision for the both of them.
Yes. It was the right decision for both. Both are happy and healthy, living their separate lives, and both inspire me in different ways.
And I inspire him to have a long, healthy, and happy marriage.
Yes, my dad and me. And other things that I always recall from my mom, even to this day, is the comfort with cutting losses. And I saw my mom do that multiple times, not with the marriage. I'm not like referring to that. But
even some friendships, if I didn't feel I was being treated appropriately and well, I would just wish people a long life without me.
Yeah. And also with careers. So my mom went from career to career until she found her true love and true calling of social work. But I'd love you to share a little bit about your thought process of when you went from the Dr. Scholl's stocking person, you sold handbags at flea markets, right. You did the stenography, you did all these different things, and you went all in with them. And then something came up that changed your mind and you pivoted and you went forward. So I'd love your thought process on how you made those changes and how you're so comfortable with cutting your losses.
I'm a believer that if it doesn't feel good and it doesn't feel right, you have to take the time to think about what direction you could take that might be a happily ever after ending. And that might work for a while. And then when it stops working, you have to reassess where you're going again, because I've seen too many people that will say, this is how I've done it, this is how I always do it, and they don't grow. And to me, growing and learning is the essence of living. I kind of philosophically and truly believe, I think we're all put on earth to learn. So I think if we don't learn our lesson the first time, we're just going to get a harder, heavier lesson that we can't ignore the second time or the third time. Eventually you learn your lesson. So I try to learn it the first time. And when I'm not feeling good in my job, even when I was at Daytop Village and management changed and I was no longer able to do the quality of work that I had gone to school to perform, and it became more churning and getting people to sign bills, I left and I went out on my own. And that was a tough decision for me, because in today's climate, without medical insurance, and I was too young for Medicare, I was going to be like in Medicare limbo, because I needed some more years to be old enough to have medical insurance. So I had to go out on COBRA and pay a fortune, but I didn't let it stop me. I just worked longer hours to pay for the insurance premiums. And then I kept hoping I'd get older quicker, believe it or not, because I wanted Medicare, which still is a good program. And so I did that. So I've never been satisfied with settling. I'm just not good at settling. And I'm not even so good with compromising, especially if I'm quite opposed to what I have to compromise for. That's not going to happen. So that's made for my having a very interesting life.
I think some of that lack of compromising streak, which I think emboldened you in a lot of ways, also was inherited a little bit with me and led to me not compromising sometimes with leaders at some companies, which wound up resulting in premature departures. But I felt better about it in the end. It caused a little stress during the time for me and Melanie.
But it's the right move. It's the right move, because you have to be true to yourself. And in the end, at night, you go into your bed and you really sleep with yourself. And if you don't like who you are and you don't like the life that you're living, it's just not worth it. You really have to reevaluate, cross your fingers, jump, hold your nose, and just pray for the best.
Lots of words of wisdom there. My three kids are fortunate enough to be living with a healthy grandma and grandpa too, of learning life lessons, career lessons. And my two boys are in the midst of applying to colleges. And my mom's been very informative to them, not just on this trip, about thinking about their life and their careers and their decisions. And also my daughter, she's only 15. She's going to be a sophomore. My boys are going to be seniors this year. But I'd love mom to share some of the lessons that you are trying to impart on the youth out there as well. I'm old, I'm 49, but the young out there, the kids starting out, what's some of the advice and guidance that you're giving to the kids out there?
Well, fortunately, your children, I haven't had to really give them much guidance, because they have parents that are intelligent and loving. But for the general population, the children that I treat, I've had to give them advice to listen to themselves, to follow their own desires. I often tell them, and I haven't really trained them, I'll say, you know what? You weren't put on earth to make your mommy and your daddy happy. You were put on earth to take care of your feelings and your needs first. And I say that to children that are not narcissistic. Otherwise, that's not a good direction to take them in. If they're not narcissistic, they really have to learn to care about how they feel and to follow their heart. And I love that work, because it takes them into new directions that I think maybe they wouldn't have done because they would have been too conformist and conforming, and they wouldn't have been happy. So I'm really proud of you, because when you didn't like participating in the PhD program, you changed direction. And yes, you're right. I did want a son who was a doctor because I'm Jewish. Past that disappointment, I've been only proud of the direction that your life's taken. Just trying to go through the interviewing process at Google was incredible, because it was going to be a great family weekend. My daughter was there. And Alan keeps excusing himself and saying, nope, I'm going to go into the car because I got to prepare myself and network and practice for the Google interview. And I never wanted to interfere with his life goals. So I say, okay, you'll join us when you can. And most of that vacation, he really only attended dinners, some meal, because he was too busy networking, and it really paid off. And I was particularly proud of you because of the perseverance, because that's the one thing you need, is perseverance, to never give up. If you fail in this direction, and we're all going to fail, then you go into another direction. Or if you really believe in your heart that that's something you have to do, you don't stop. Like when I knew I was going to college and I had children at home and I had a husband at home. And if I put their needs in front of my own educational requirements, like midterms and finals for the grades, that I was not going to get to where I needed to go. And so everybody in my immediate family knew that, and kids were fine with it. My husband was fine with it. My extended family was not fine with it, because sometimes they would have two events on one weekend before midterms. And I would say, I can afford to go to one of them because I need to study or write. Which one do you want me to go to? Because I can't do both. And that would get me on the outs. I am so glad in retrospect that I followed my heart, because it got me to where I needed to go.
Yeah. And I think you've always been very supportive of both family and career. And that trip that we're talking about, I did spend a lot of time with the kids, but I was locked in the car as I was preparing for my Google interview, because I had 11 rounds of interviews and I had to quickly figure out what ad serving was, because I was going from American Express, where I was doing financial services, and now I was going to take a job as a product operation and escalation manager at Google. I had no effing idea what I was doing. So I was speaking to a person who referred me in there, Ben, who dedicated the time and effort to help prep me for that. And you were very patient. So was Melanie. So were the kids. I remember you guys were into the pizza shop. I was in the car with the heater on, just because it was the only place that I could have some warmth and
quiet,
some privacy.
Right, because yeah. The kids were making noise in the background, right?
Yeah. And I think that was also something that you've also instilled in me, of the family and the career, right, and how to have that together. And I think you and dad worked hard. He came home late, but you were always there during that time. And
I supported him for that, because I believe in hard work and following goals. So that was something I believed in. He was a really good dad to you. He worked hard. He was absent a lot, but when he was there, he was in it 110%.
Yep, he was. And that's how I got one of my first jobs, nepotism, through working at his company.
Wasn't that because a temporary agency you were working for just coincidentally sent you to your father's company?
It did happen. So my dad put me in touch with some temp agency, and the temp agency quickly hired me because of the relationship with my dad.
Then
the temp agency put me at a lot of different places. And the last two places I worked with were the National Basketball Association, the NBA.
Right.
And Arne Holdenes Bleichorder, right, which was my dad's client.
But the NBA wasn't going to pay you enough, because they just thought you were so fortunate to work for them. And so you decided you were smart. If I'm going to work, I'm going to make money. So you went the direction of Wall Street.
Well, both companies, to be fair, paid me shit. Uh-huh. So the NBA was going to offer me $24,000. And Arne Holdenes Bleichorder was offering me $30,000. So $6,000 back then was a lot of money. But it was still, neither one really afforded me the lifestyle that to pay for my own rent and all that stuff. I was still living at home back then. The decision I made at that time, which I don't regret, was the one for money at that point, because I thought going onto Wall Street would open up more opportunity for me. And it did. I made $30,000 bonus at Arnold Weishaerter, $31,000. But my next job was at CIBC for $45,000. My next one was at UBS for $75,000. So that was the right choice at the time, although I was still always smitten with sports. And I wound up going back to sports, getting essentially the same crap salary when I worked for the Brooklyn Cyclones and the New Haven Ravens, making $20,000 back then as a director of promotions. But I digress there.
No, but Wall Street did it for me too, because I was single and I was working for an insurance company. And my friend Renee was working for little brokers. And like, Renee is getting a bigger salary and she's getting a thing I learned called bonuses. And I'm like, bonuses, Renee, what's that? And she told me, well, if the company does good, they throw hundreds and thousands of dollars my way. And I'm like, then what am I doing working for an insurance company? Because I'm not stupid. So I started to look for jobs on Wall Street. And I worked on Wall Street for several years. And I got more salary than insurance companies were paying. And I got those bonuses. And with Bleichroeder, I got profit sharing too. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Those were good days.
And for those of you out there in the Sick Career audience, Arnold and Bleichroeder no longer exists. It was acquired by Natixis, a French bank.
George Soros came from Bleichroeder. They made George Soros. They brought him in from Germany, and he was one of the top traders.
Yeah. No, Bleichroeder was a good bank, but most people on this podcast would never have heard of it.
Right. It was a small boutique house.
Yeah. I think what my mom talks about right there of the bonus is a really important point, because as I advise clients, people get confused often about total compensation and they're too focused on salary. But there are things, there are multiple different factors and levers that weigh into your compensation, which weigh into your W-2 for those in the States, or weigh into that money that pays for your kids' tuition, your mortgage, your rent, your groceries, or whatever. And when I worked for American Express, for instance, I got salary and I got a bonus of 8%, and I got very minor RSUs, restricted stock units. Then once you start looking in the tech sector, you get significant restricted stock units, especially for well-established companies. So that by the time that I left working at Salesforce, I was making $214,000 of salary, but I was getting about $300,000 of restricted stock units and also a bonus. So it's really important to think about the total compensation. And with my dad, a Bleichroeder was a private company, but they had a big profit sharing. So his salary was okay, but meager.
But his bonuses could be big.
Yeah. The bonuses some years made or break broke us.
Right.
Like, my dad was not as good with
money management
is my mom. So he would always count on that bonus. And in the good years, those bonuses would come. In the bad years, we would struggle a little bit.
A lot.
Or a lot.
And then I'd do key punch at night to catch us up.
Yeah.
Right.
But I think that's a really valid point of what led my mom to go from insurance to Wall Street. And why not get, instead of just salary, get bonus and get equity. And some companies give you a sign-on bonus or give you carry or all these different levers. And whatever it is, it all translates into compensation that can pay for your kid's tuition, that can pay for the psychologist that my mom sent me to as a first grader to learn how to toot my horn, to pay for my undergrad education, my sister's undergrad education, my mom's undergrad education, my mom's graduate education. So all that stuff is real.
Really important, really important. People underestimate the importance.
And people don't talk about it, and people get confused with it, and companies use that to their advantage to hold people down, because companies have more information and more insight about compensation and about what people are paid than the individual is. So that's one thing that we try to do at Kadima Careers, is provide enlightenment on that and transparency in terms of all those different levers. We're running a little low on time, so we'll finish it up with two more questions for my mom.
Oh.
The first one is, you gave a lot of great advice to me over the course of my career. As you talk to the Sick Career audience out there, what is one piece of Sick Career advice you'd like to leave my audience with?
So sometimes you're with one person in a relationship and it's a good relationship and you can get it to ripple out in networking wise to meet other people. Or you could be a nasty person and it doesn't ripple out very far and you kind of sink with it. So I think you always have to be kind to people. Even if they're not as nice to you as you'd like them to be, kindness ripples out eventually.
So true. And the last question I'll ask is, if people want to reach out to you, if they want to get some more words of wisdom, what's the best way that they can reach out to you?
You can send me an email, sl359@columbia.edu. I'd love to hear from you.
Great. And you're still getting value out of that Columbia education with that Columbia email.
You bet I am. I worked hard to get to it and get through it. And I'm going to use that until I go out feet forward.
Great. Well, thanks a lot, Mom. I appreciate the insights and inspiration you've given me, my career, my life, and my kids now. And thank you now for imparting some wisdom on the Sick Career audience here.
And I thank you, especially for my three little dividends, Jonah, Lucas, and Ms. Jasmine. Thank you, Alan.
Thanks, Mom.
That wraps up another remarkable episode of the Sick Career Podcast with Alan Stein. Check out past episodes and other resources on the website. That's sickpodcast.com, and it's S-Y-C-K. Alan, tell the audience about the newsletter they can sign up for.
The newsletter rocks. Check out the accelerator, XLR8R. You will get great tips about your career. You'll get honest insights. You'll get the occasional pet picture. And you will learn how to take proactive control and take charge of your career.
Very good. Very good. That's sickpodcast.com, S-Y-C-K. For your host, Alan Stein, I'm Russ Reba, and we hope you've enjoyed today's episode. You are going to love the next one.